Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, August 17th, 2026. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Trump Department of Energy kicks Native Americans and other citizens off Hanford Oversight Board. Hospice care nursing home resident who died after being evacuated from Old Trails fire in Spokane, likely first death related to the fires that swept through Spokane and surrounding areas on August 1st. Washington Attorney General Nick Brown is challenging Avista's plans for a rate increase. Conservation sued the federal government over a plan to allow cattle grazing on 24 million acres in the West. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Trump Department of Energy has decided to kick those who represent tribal nations, environmental groups, labor and local government, and others off the Hanford Advisory Board and replace them with people the Trump administration picks. The board has long served as an independent voice on the Hanford cleanup policy that found agreement on controversial issues among disparate and regional groups. Local groups nominated representatives to the board, which meant it could remain independent. The board was often able to present a united front on controversial issues. The Tri-City Herald reports the board has had as many as 70 members, including alternates. The Trump White House says it will now pick about 20 people to serve on the board and says 25 people have applied so far. The Department of Energy says the board will no longer advise all three of the tri-party agencies who have legally binding agreements on Hanford cleanup standards and deadlines. In the past, the board has advised the Department of Energy, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and the Washington Department of Ecology, all signatories to the tri-party agreement. The Energy Department claims the changes will modernize the board. Hanford Energy Department Manager Ray Geimer said, "Improving the Hanford Advisory Board will ensure continuity and efficiency while empowering those who live, work, and raise their families closest to Hanford." Seattle-based Hanford Challenge Executive Director Nicholas Peterson said, "The DOE didn't modernize the Hanford Advisory Board. They wiped out the voices that hold them accountable. They got rid of anyone who ever pushes back, who asks hard questions, who doesn't just say yes, sir, to DOE. This is a power grab, plain and simple." The Department of Energy has long tried to weaken the board, starting with pushing for term limits in 2012. The Tri-City Herald reports by 2022, the Energy Department was broadly enforcing term limits, causing the board to lose enthusiastic longtime members who had a deep knowledge of the site and carried a significant workload for the board. The Hanford Nuclear Reservation was the site of World War II and Cold War development of atomic bombs and now must clean up 56 million gallons of radioactive waste, large amounts of other waste contaminated with plutonium, plus soil and buildings contaminated with radioactive waste and hazardous chemicals at the 580-square-mile site next to Richland, Washington. Scientists often refer to it as the most polluted location on the planet. The Washington Department of Ecology issued a statement objecting to the downsizing and reorganization of the Hanford Advisory Board. The statement said, "This action is the culmination of several years of unilateral decide-announce-defend decision-making by Energy that disregards more than 32 years of meaningful collaboration and goodwill between the agencies and communities most impacted by cleanup. The intention deviation from our memorandum of understanding alongside the other unilateral changes energy is instituting fundamentally restructures the Hanford Advisory Board and ignores why it was formed in the first place. The Center for Biological Diversity filed a lawsuit in district court in Oregon Thursday against the Trump administration over plans to allow cattle grazing on 24 million acres of federal land in the West, where cattle grazing was previously not allowed. Defendants include Interior Secretary Doug Burgum and Agriculture Department head Brooke Rollins, whose agency oversees the Forest Service. Lawyers for the Center for Biological Diversity say Burgum and Rollins violated federal law by approving the massive grazing plan without consulting with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the National Marine Fisheries Service about the plan's impact on protected species and critical habitat. When Rollins announced the plan in October of last year, he smeared environmental groups, saying, "For too long, bureaucratic overreach and activist-driven lawfare have undermined the multiple-use mandate of our national forests and grasslands. Today, we are empowering line officers with clear direction and reaffirming grazing as an essential tool for healthy landscapes and vibrant rural communities." Center for Biological Diversity attorney Andrea Zaccardi said, "Grazing on our country's public lands harms vulnerable animals. Letting cattle trample millions more acres of public land isn't just wrong, it's also illegal." The Forest Service and land management agencies also, in a recent memorandum, agreed to fast-track grazing permits under the banner of wildfire fuels reduction or temporarily relocating natural disaster-displaced livestock, but within a recently published interactive map illustrating the proposed grazing expansion, the group found dozens of new U.S. Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management allotments identified for potential grazing that are also home to federally protected species. The lawsuit says that includes areas around Oregon's Blue Mountains and Mount Hood National Forest, as well as areas near federally protected landscapes, including the Pony Express Trail in Utah, canyons of the Ancients National Monument in Colorado, and the Sonoran Desert National Monument in Arizona. Among the threatened species that could be impacted by expanded grazing are grizzly bears and gray wolves, which are often killed when conflicts arise between the wild and domesticated animals. The lawsuit says Oregon spotted frogs, the Snake River Basin steelhead, Colorado pike minnow, Mexican spotted owls, and western yellow-billed cuckoos can also be impacted by the expanded grazing plan.
Commercial and recreational salmon fishing on the Lower Columbia River could be changed forever after the Bonneville Power Administration decided to pull funding for its long-standing hatchery program, the Select Area Fisheries Enhancement, or SAFE program, created to mitigate the harmful impacts of dams on the river and fisheries, will be defunded at the end of September. James Adkins with the Association of Northwest Steelheaders says the funding loss could mean the end of some recreational fishing seasons, including coho season, which starts right now.
In August, which is typically when the, quote, buoy 10 season kicks off, that season may just go away. You may still be able to harvest fall Chinook, but coho would just disappear altogether.
In a statement, the Bonneville Power Administration says it is canceling the SAFE program because it only augments the fish harvest and has not helped threatened wild salmon and other species recover. Both the Washington and Oregon Departments of Fish and Wildlife run the SAFE program with Bonneville and say they were surprised to hear it was being defunded. ODFW's Davia Palmieri says Bonneville is obligated to offset the profound loss of wild fish populations, as well as recreational and commercial fishing opportunities caused by the dam system. She also notes that canceling the program at the end of September is especially rough, as 7 million hatchery fish won't be ready for release by then.
We do not have the resources to pay for those fish beyond October 1st, so those fish are currently at risk. And then if those fish don't make it back into the system, we will lose fishing opportunity in future years. $1 million.
Palmieri adds the program does aid endangered fish by reducing pressure on wild fish migrating up the Columbia. She says Bonneville just got a new administrator after the decision to cancel the program was made, so she's hopeful that will create an opportunity for the decision to be reversed. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
The daughter of a 73-year-old woman who died after being evacuated from a nursing home during the wildfire that raced through northwestern Spokane August 1st says the suspected arsonist who started the blaze should be charged in her mother's death. Kimberly Speedy went to the Spokane Health and Rehabilitation Nursing Home when she heard about the fire and was with her mother as crews wheeled the bed-bound mother's hospital bed across the uneven terrain of the parking lot. Pat Speedy's bowels ruptured during the evacuation process, and she was evacuated by ambulance first to Shadle Park High School and then to a hospital. She died August 9th. Pat Speedy had been in a nursing home for 4 years after she was bedbound by a stroke, where doctors diagnosed her with Ogilvy syndrome, a condition where the colon is paralyzed and does not move food through the intestine. After that diagnosis, health workers moved her to hospice care at the nursing home. Kimberly Speedy said her mother loved living at Spokane Health and Rehabilitation, making friends with residents and caretakers, and was actively engaged in life despite being bedridden. She told the Spokesman Review she was still very lively and had a great sense of humor and loved to visit with everybody. It's just a tragedy that this is how she went out. That wouldn't have happened had the arson fires not been set. She'd still be in the room visiting with her friends. Pat Speedy's death is the only one associated with the fires that ripped through Spokane August 1st, destroying 800 buildings, including many homes. Spokane County Sheriff John Knowles told the Spokesman Review his office will investigate Pat Speedy's death as it relates to his office's prosecution of Aaron Farinacci, who prosecutors say admitted to starting the Old Trails fire, which burned into the Indian Trail neighborhood where Speedy's nursing home is located. Knowles said charging Farinacci with Speedy's death would depend on whether her death was a direct result of evacuation from the fire, her medical history, the fact she was in hospice care already, and the culpability of other people involved in her evacuation. Knowles said, "There's going to have to be a lot of work that goes into it, but those questions are answerable." Speaking of Farinacci, Kimberly Speedy said, "It's unbelievable this guy has such a disregard for human life. I don't know, that needs to be taken into account. There's a lot more damage than just structural. I want him held accountable. This guy killed my mom."
Montana communities are providing more help and hope for people struggling with mental health. These efforts are based on a locally driven system called Crisis Now. One part is the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. The Montana Healthcare Foundation says 88% of calls in 2025 were resolved over the phone. For people needing in-person help, mobile crisis response teams can get involved. In Helena, behavioral specialists respond with law enforcement or on their own. Kayla Morris with St. Peter's Health manages the program.
Our goal is to be out the door within 2 minutes and headed in the direction of wherever the crisis is. So we will meet people on the sides of the road. We'll meet them in their home. We'll meet them at schools. We'll meet them anywhere where they are in the community where they have a need.
Teams are available 24/7, 365 days a year. Morris says the goal is to de-escalate crises and free up law enforcement officers to focus on public safety. The Montana Healthcare Foundation says last year there were 1,400 fewer jail stays and emergency room visits in the state as a result of MCRTs. The third part of Crisis Now is providing places for people to go. At least 5 crisis centers operate in Montana, including Journey Home in Helena, which reopened in April. Heather Irby is with Many Rivers Whole Health, which now owns and operates Journey Home as a walk-in outpatient clinic.
She says it currently offers stays of less than 24 hours and will offer longer stays in the future.
It really operates as kind of a mental health emergency department so that people can come here and redirect from the emergency department, who are so very busy with more of the physical health. So it's another location for people to go for that support.
Scott Malloy with the Montana Healthcare Foundation says there are plans for 6 more centers. He adds Crisis Now shouldn't always be the first option and suggests people start with those who already know them, like family, friends, healthcare providers, and clergy members.
It would be disingenuous to say everyone should call 988 if you're having a problem. 988 is there and we should be using it, but we should be exhausting those other natural supports that sometimes aren't as obvious when we're in crisis.
Malloy says Crisis Now is operating or being developed in 39 counties and 4 tribal nations in Montana, with communities choosing mental health solutions that best fit their needs. I'm Laura Hatch, Big Sky Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
KRFP thanks its listeners and sponsors, including Tie-Dye Everything, with locally made tie-dyed items, incense, and other accessories. Tie-Dye Everything is located near 6th Street at 527 South Main Street in Moscow. For more information, you can find Tie-Dye Everything at tie-dye-everything.com.
Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by Dunga Dunga Brewing Company of 333 North Jackson Street in Moscow. Dunga Dunga features live music, special events, fine food, and craft beers. At HungaDungaBrewing.com and on Facebook and Instagram.
The Idaho Department of Health and Welfare announced Monday a Canyon County resident over the age of 65 now has West Nile virus meningitis. Infected mosquitoes spread West Nile virus through bites. The health department news release reports health workers hospitalized the infected person and the person is now recovering at home. According to the Idaho Capital Sun, Idaho State Epidemiologist Dr. Christine Hahn wrote in a statement, "The report of the first severe West Nile virus disease of the season in an Idaho resident is a good reminder for all of us to take protective measures against mosquito bites. This includes wearing insect repellent and protective clothing in addition to reducing standing water around gardens and homes where mosquitoes can lay eggs." Southwest District Health Epidemiologist Lakshmi Rita Venugopal said, "Most people infected with West Nile virus don't feel sick. A fifth of the people mosquitoes infect develop a fever and other symptoms like a headache, body aches, joint pain, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, swollen lymph glands, or a rash. Risk of severe illness and death can be up to 40% higher in people that take immune system suppressants, such as treatments for cancer, autoimmune disease, and organ transplants." Washington Attorney General Nick Brown is challenging Avista's proposed electricity rate increases. Because Avista operates as a monopoly, the Washington Utilities and Transportation Commission gets to set the price of electricity. Avista filed with the commission for a rate increase in January that would provide 10.2% profitability. That would be an increase in revenue of $110 million the first year. Attorney General Brown says Avista has not proven it needs more than a 7.2% return on investments. According to the Spokesman Review, Brown said, "We expect that Avista will attempt to explain why they think it's necessary and will back up our testimony and hopefully have a robust debate with the Utilities and Transportation Commission about the reasonableness of their request." Explaining his recommended return on investments for Avista, Brown said, "We really look at a number of different factors and use expert economists and analysts to reach these decisions. We compare them across the industry to other similarly situated utility providers in similar markets and look at what is a reasonable rate of return." Brown also points out the Avista CEO's salary is $4.7 million, although Washington customers only pay $746,000 of that. The Public Counsel's expert David Garrett recommended an 8.5% return on investments for Avista 2 years ago and is now recommending 7.2%. 1 month prior to his recommendation for Avista, Garrett recommended an 8.3% return for an Oklahoma utility. The Spokesman Review reports the recommendation for Avista is Garrett's lowest recommendation in recent history, and his recommendations tend to range between 8.5% and 9.1%. The Utility and Transportation Commission recommended a 9.625% return for Avista, and the Consumer Group Alliance of Western Energy Consumers is recommending a 9.0% return. Avista says it needs to spend money to invest in its infrastructure. It said in a rebuttal August 7th, the General Counsel's recommendation of a 7.2% return is extremely low by the General Counsel's standards. Avista Regulatory Affairs Director Pat Erbar said, "We're cost-based, so we're not market-based in terms of our pricing. Starbucks, they can charge my daughter $9 for a drink. That's market-based pricing. We are cost-based." There will be a public comment hearing on Avista's rate increase request Thursday, August 27th, and there will be a court-like evidentiary hearing before the Public Utilities and Transportation Commission Thursday and Friday, September 17th and 18th. The commission expects a final decision in December, and whatever rate changes they approve will show up in power customers' bills in January. The agenda for tonight's Moscow City Council meeting includes two public hearings. The first public hearing will be on the fiscal year 2027 budget, which is just under $150 million. The budget includes the maximum 3% inflationary increase over the previous year's budget allowed by state law. According to the Latah County Assessor's Office, the assessed taxable valuation within the city increased by 4.7% this year, which resulted in a reduction of the city's levy rate from $3.57 per $1,000 assessed valuation to $3.51 per $1,000 valuation. There will also be a public hearing required by state law tonight on any new fees or increases to the existing fees of more than 5%. Idaho Code also requires city fees to be reasonably related to the actual cost of the service provided. The fee increases are due to the additional costs associated with the delivery of services, including administration, operations, and maintenance. City staff is proposing to adjust the following fees: arts programs, land use and development fees, construction permit fees, and fees related to inspections, increases to sanitation rates, water permit and service rates, sewer permit and service rates, street closure and traffic control, and stormwater rates. Other miscellaneous fee changes are included in fiber optic service license fees, parks and recreation program fees, community event permit fees, Hamilton Indoor Recreation Center gym and room rentals, aquatic center admission, passes and lessons, and maps and document fees. The Moscow City Council will meet tonight at 7 p.m. at City Hall. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area, there will be patchy smoke tonight between 10 p.m. and 4 a.m., partly cloudy, low 54. Mostly sunny tomorrow, high 87, calm wind becoming west 5 to 10 in the morning, gusts up to 20 miles per hour. Mostly clear, low 50 Tuesday night. Sunny, high 87 Wednesday. Partly cloudy, low 50 Wednesday night. And sunny, high 92 on Thursday. Currently 88 degrees. Air quality at this hour in north central Idaho is moderate to good. And the air quality at this hour in eastern Washington, in Pullman, Lewiston, and Spokane is moderate. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843, or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know that your business and nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. Flashpoints is coming up next. Bex is on the air at 7:30 playing music for you with Spotlight, and Chia Pet's on the air to play music for you 9 to 11 tonight. Nardwar's on at 11. Stay tuned for more KRFP, Moscow Pullman.